from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Grape Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Grape Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
On a Monday evening, we welcome you in. It is a Grey Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for the next couple hours, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. Glad to have you with us. You're going to get a lot more sports open lines here starting in about a week or so as the Cardinal season will come to an end on Sunday. And then more often than not, we'll be coming your way each weekday night for a couple hours, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock for a Grey Bar Sports Open Line. We've got a lot coming up on this edition of the program today. Guest on the show today, we are going to talk with Brian Barnhart, the voice of the University of Illinois, Illinois Athletics, football and basketball. But we'll talk with him about Illini football. What a great win for them on Friday night. They go to Lincoln and knock off Nebraska. That's a fantastic victory. They do it in overtime. They had a chance to maybe win late. Didn't put much of a drive together. Then they go into overtime, and man, were they good in the extra period as they had no problem scoring their touchdown, and then their defense really turned it up a notch. So that was impressive, and I think a lot of people are taking note of Illinois football going on the road. Not that Nebraska's a great team, but Nebraska was in the top 25. That's always a tough place to go going into Lincoln. Even when they're down, that's a tough place to play. So going to Lincoln, getting a victory, that was impressive. That was impressive all the way. So good on them for coming away with that win. We'll talk with Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Later on this hour, we'll talk Mizzou football. They also get a win. They also are ranked, but it felt a little bit different for Mizzou because they played a Vanderbilt team that we don't think is very good. And Vanderbilt played them tough, so tough that they go to overtime. But sometimes you have days like that, and you just need to find a way to win. And that's what Missouri did. People are worried about their ranking going down. You kind of knew that was going to happen when you allow Vanderbilt to play that tough. Missouri's going to have plenty of games against plenty of teams that will help them have their ranking go up, so I'm not too worried about that. And then next hour, we're going to do mostly Cardinals. It's Strike Zone Hour here on Sports Open Line. So really three big things are going to be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to listen in to some of what John Mozeliak had to say to Tom Ackerman yesterday morning, because I think it was interesting what he said. More than anything else, because it helps to maybe start to kind of show us what direction the team is going to be going in this offseason. So that's one thing we're going to do next hour. We're going to listen back to the comments that were made by Wilson Contreras and Nolan Arenado. That's probably been the biggest Cardinal story of the last 24 hours or so. Arenado to a certain extent, but certainly Contreras saying some things that have caught some people. I don't know if off guard is the people just took note. People took note of what Contreras said essentially, and we'll play the audio coming up next hour. Essentially, he's calling on the organization to make the team better and to do things, and for the front office to make a run where this team and this organization can take control of the NL Central with moves that they make. And I don't per se disagree with anything that Wilson Contreras said. I do question a little bit if it was the correct forum to say that. Sometimes I get a bit uncomfortable when, even if it's not by name, if a player is being critical of the team, well, in turn, you are being critical of your teammates. And that makes me just a little bit uncomfortable. But it's also, again, at the end of the day, I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the candor, and I don't disagree per se with the stuff that Wilson Contreras said. So we'll get into that coming up a little bit next hour as well. And also Brian Kennedy, our good friend from Channel 4 KMOV, First Alert 4, he is going to join us. We'll talk Cardinals baseball and a few other things as well. We'll get into some Mizzou football with him. That's going to be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. But the Cardinals, they wrap up the home portion of the schedule yesterday. You know, they've won. They've looked good against some good teams in the second half of the season. That's the thing that frustrates me. You know, I saw something today. It was either Jeremy Hitt with Chris and Amy or with the Glover Show. I was looking at our text line, and somebody was on before me, And somebody texted in and said, remember, the Cardinals lost 2 of 3 to the White Sox. I think trying to say this is how bad the Cardinals are. They lost 2 of 3 to the White Sox earlier in the year. And I understand having that take and trying to use that as a way to like prove something. But one of the most infuriating things about this Cardinals team this year was the fact that they did go have success against good teams. They had many series wins. And I'm never one to judge a baseball team in a 162-game season on one series. So you're never going to hear me say something along the lines of, well, they did lose 2 of 3 to the White Sox. As bad as the White Sox are, and the White Sox are arguably the worst team in the modern era of Major League Baseball. I am not sugarcoating the White Sox whatsoever. They are horrible. They are terrible. But the Cardinals aren't the only team that they won a series from. Now, they didn't win many series, to be fair. They didn't win many. But that's, you don't judge the Cardinals on how good or bad that they possibly were this year based off one series. It's the totality of the season. And I also think it's the when the wins come and when they really, really needed them. You know, in the second half of the season, there's really two moments for the Cardinals. Because don't forget, like, this is still a team that they're above 500. And I'm not sitting here telling you that being an above 500 team means that they've had a really good season. Clearly they haven't. They missed the playoffs. Going into the season, the hope is that they were going to be a division winner. As the season went along, the hope became that they would get into the playoffs. None of those things are going to end up happening. But when I look back at this season and I try to figure out the moments where things did go wrong, I think about that 4-game series in Chicago in the first week of August, and they lost 3 of 4. They were coming off the trade deadline, lots of momentum with Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham coming in. The excitement was palpable inside of the clubhouse. They had outscored the Texas Rangers 18-2 in the final 2 games of that series. They had all the momentum in the world, and it felt like they were ready to go on a run. And then what do? They lose 3 of 4 to the Cubs. That's the first moment I look at. And then the second moment, when they were just holding on for any possible hope that they could be a playoff team, they went to Cincinnati and got swept in a 3-game series. If those two series go different, I guess you can say, well, if any two series go different, but those, to me, those are the two crossroad moments in this season for the Cardinals, losing 3 of 4 to Chicago and getting swept in Cincinnati, all in the month of August, and they were just never able to recover after that. We'll talk a lot more Cardinals baseball coming up later on in the program. Up next, though, Brian Barnhart will join us. We'll talk through what happened with the Fighting Illini on Friday night in Lincoln against Nebraska. That's up next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Illinois football, they have defeated 2 ranked opponents in the same season for the first time since 2007. They are off to a 4-0 start for the first time since 2011. They won a fantastic game with a great performance against then number 22 Nebraska on Friday in overtime, 31-24. On the call of that game, and always on the call of Illini football, he is Brian Barnhart. He joins us right now. Brian, thank you so much for your time. How are you?
Hey, Matt. Great to be on with you. And, happy to be talking about a great start for the Illini.
Yeah, I'm watching that game on Friday. And the thing that really struck me was they did not have a great drive on that final drive of regulation. But then, man, oh, man, did they look great in overtime. They scored the touchdown easily. And then the defense, what was it, the 3 straight sacks or whatever it was to shut down Nebraska. A lot of teams, if you kind of have that down of not doing, having a great drive at the end of regulation, it'd be tough to turn it right back around, but man, they had no problem right there.
No, you're right, Matt. In front of, 86,000 fans who were there for a big celebration that night, 400 straight sellouts and undefeated Nebraska and so forth. So it was almost like if, you're in a boxing match and it was, both fighters are doing really well, and then all of a sudden there's a knockout punch. And that was in the overtime. And you're right, the drive when Illinois got the ball first in overtime, Caden Fagan, was able to get around the end real quickly and get them down close, and then they punch it in, of course. And then on defense, once I think Nebraska on their first play got called for a false start, so they started, you know, back at the 30. And then Aaron Henry, the defensive coordinator, dialed up a couple of blitzes right away. And it was the first time all night Dylan Raiola, the quarterback, who's outstanding, by the way. He's a really good freshman quarterback. That was the first time all night he looked really rattled.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Henry just dialed it up at the exact moment it needed to be done. And then the last sack, Dylan Rosiak, the Illini linebacker, just came through untouched and sacked him, and the game was over. I mean, it happened so fast and so dramatically that, boy, it sent everybody home back to Champaign pretty happy.
From a belief standpoint, because you look at the season, how it went along, a blowout in the first game, the way it was supposed to be against Eastern Illinois, then what felt like a really good win against number 19 Kansas as the season has gone along. Well, maybe Kansas isn't quite as good as we thought what they were going to be. Another game you're supposed to win against Central Michigan. And it felt like this was the moment on Friday where this team showed that everything that they've done so far is legit. Do you kind of agree with that? Is there a belief that's going on now with this 4-0 start?
I think, you know, the belief has been there a little bit more because season ticket sales have been up. You know, we had our first sellout in several years, of course, for the Kansas game at 51,000, which is a big crowd for a game against Central Michigan. It was homecoming, of course. But I think you're right. You're expected to win the first game. They didn't play perfect against Central Michigan, but they did it very workmanlike. And then, of course, the Kansas game. And that's still a really good Kansas team. I know they've lost a couple of times since, but Jalen Daniels just gave us fits last year in Lawrence. That entire team, you know, really hurt Illinois out in Lawrence the year before. So that was a really good win. But you're right. I think part of it, Matt, I think is the game was on national TV on Friday night. It was a ranked matchup, two ranked teams, and all that was at stake for Nebraska. And then to go in there on national TV and win it, that's what's created the not only the buzz nationally, and now the number 19 ranking. But for Illini fans, it's like, hey, I think we've got something mm-hmm. here. And the team has believed it all along. And Brett Bielema is, you know, the best I've seen in organizing a team, getting his roster the way he wants it, the way he works with his players and coaches. I mean, we saw him win at Wisconsin in the Big Ten years ago. And this guy knows how to win football games. And he's just really good at what he does.
He was the defensive coordinator at K-State when I was at K-State as a student, and I covered him. And I loved him at K-State, and I've always felt like he's a much better coach than maybe he's been given credit for. And obviously, his stop after Wisconsin didn't quite go the way that he would have wanted to go. But I don't know. I've always thought that Brett Bielema was a heck of a football coach.
Well, you were there, of course. You know, Bill Snyder. He worked for Bill Snyder. He worked for played for Hayden Fry. He worked for Kirk Ferentz. You know, he worked, for Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, of course. In the after the Arkansas job, he went to the NFL. He worked for Bill Belichick. I mean, he's told us, and I agree. I mean, I think we're getting the best version of him as a person. He's got two young daughters, and he's married with his wife and their kids. He's a little more mature now, I think. He'll tell you that. And as a coach, he's learned a lot. He's learned from the very best. He was just talking today about, you know, one of the things he learned on how to treat road games and home games to be exactly the same regardless of where you are is through Kirk Ferentz, who's been so consistent at Iowa. So he's picked up on different things over the years from different coaches, and not just any coach, but some of the best in both college and pro football. So I think we're getting a really good version of him.
His record is what it is at Illinois, and everybody knows in many ways this is a make-or-break year for him, and the 4-0 start doesn't guarantee anything. The team still has to continue to play well. How has he addressed that at all in terms of knowing that his seat was a little bit warm? Is that something that he talked about, or is it just, you know, get rid of all that noise and just go do your job?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's in really good stead. He's, you know, he's got an athletic director, Josh Whitman, who's fully behind him. I think, Josh was like, hey, we want to get someone who can have some sustained success, consistent success. And Brett Bielema is all about that. And so I think they're joined at the hip on this in the goals that they have to succeed at Illinois, which has not been an easy job over the years for a lot of different coaches. We've been really had high highs and low lows. But to try to be more consistent and competitive and smart and dependable and tough. And I think he's, you know, as long as he continues to win as he, I don't sense the seat is even warm at this point, because he's, you know, he's got a really good contract. He's got facilities that he can use. He always wanted to get back to the Big Ten. He kept an eye on this job even after he left Wisconsin. And I think he's exactly where he wants to be, and I think that's where the athletic department wants him too.
Luke Altmyer, 4 touchdown passes. The honors have been coming in. Big Ten co-offensive player of the week. He's the on the Davey O'Brien grade 8 list. He's on the Manning Award star of the week. How fantastic was he in your thoughts just watching him on Friday?
Oh, he was great. I mean, he's been solid all year, but I mean, they were coming at him hard, you know, pressure. Every time, if you go back, and I don't pretend to know all the details of how they grade quarterbacks, but, you know, all the key ones, how he performed under pressure, when he was in a hurry, when there was a blitz coming, whatever, when a play broke down, he graded out fantastic in all of those things. So, and he's really improved a lot. You got to remember, he didn't start a lot at Ole Miss. He was a backup here or there. So last year was his first year starting, and he struggled early, you know, has showed good arm, but he threw the 4 picks against Penn State a year ago in Champaign. But from that point on, he was really good until he got hurt late in the year when John Paddock came in at the end of the season and rallied the team to a win at Minnesota. But, you know, he's got his second year now under Barry Lunney. I think they know each other better. I mean, hey, he's thrown 10 touchdowns and no interceptions in 4 games, and I can't think of even a close one yet on an interception. So he's been remarkable, and I think his confidence is really high, and the guys will tell you he can be even better.
Zakkar Franklin dealing with a little bit of a leg issue. Has there been any update on his status?
I have not heard. I actually was not able to go to the press conference today. I was doing some traveling back from an event up in Minnesota, so I missed the press conference today. So to be honest, I just haven't really seen anything yet. But I think he was able to get back in the game the other night. We had 2 or 3 guys like that were out early and then came back. So hopefully he's good to go, but I'd be honest, I just haven't seen anything lately.
This upcoming game, it's obviously a tough one, going on the road to take on a Penn State team that's a top 10 team in the nation. It's going to take the same type of effort and even more than the team had against Nebraska.
Yeah, and you know, it will, oh, for sure. And Penn State is physical, they're tough. You know, I think that their defense is very, very good. I think James Franklin, I think it's going to be a wide out. And I've done a couple of games there when it's been a whiteout. It's an amazing atmosphere. But for Illinois, you know, for as far as Illinois fans go, it's, hey, the team's not thinking this way, but fans are like, hey, let's just give it a shot. We're big underdogs. Let's go out there, and we won out there 2 years ago. So let's do it again. And, you know, I think Penn State showed a little vulnerability in their game with Bowling Green. I mean, Bowling Green, I think, led at half in that game in Happy Valley. So, you know, I think as far as Illinois fans are concerned, they're like, hey, just give it a shot. If we win it, fantastic. Obviously, 5-0. If we don't, we're 4-1 with a bye week and then Purdue coming in a couple of weeks. So I think but for the team, they feel like they can win it. And they feel like they can go out there and steal another one like they did 2 years ago.
Brian Barnhart is the fantastic voice of Illini Athletics. I'm sure it was just a blast calling that game on Friday. Brian, thanks so much for taking the time, and hopefully we can talk to you some more down the road as Illinois continues what looks to be a very, very good season.
Well, thanks, Matt. Keep up the great work, and anytime you want me, let me know.
Awesome. Very good. That's Brian Barnhart, the play-by-play voice for Illinois football, Illinois men's basketball. Just a fantastic, fantastic win for Illinois football on Friday night. Nobody's calling the win for Mizzou on Saturday against Vanderbilt fantastic, but a win is a win is a win. A win actually dropped them a little bit in the rankings. Did we learn anything? Like, should we be worried that they allowed Vanderbilt to play them tough and go to overtime? Or is this one of those games that you have every year? And if you can win it, you take it and you move forward. Eli Hoff, who covers the Tigers for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, he joins us next on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Bernie Nicholas joins the Chris and Amy Show Tuesdays and Thursdays at 11:35 on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Look, at the end of the day, you know, we're a group of guys, a group of team that's really tough, really resilient, found a way to win. It's not about how you win. It's about that you do win.
That's Missouri football coach Eli Drinkwitz speaking with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday morning yesterday. Welcome back in. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We We just talked a little Fighting Illini football. I think Illini fans are probably a little bit more happy with the way their weekend went than the way Mizzou fans are. But you know what? A win is a win. And right now, let's bring in Eli Hoff. He covers the Tigers for STL Today and the Post-Dispatch. Eli, I appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing all right. So what is it? Is this is there reasons to be concerned about their performance, or is this just, you know what, during the course of a football season, sometimes you have a little bit of a dud, and if you can win it, you just take the win and you go forward?
Well, I think it's fair to say there are reasons to be concerned. Obviously, at the end of the day, you know, like that soundbite from Coach Drinkwitz said, a win is a win, 4-0 is 4-0, and Mizzou needs to continue racking up wins to do what it wants to do this year. But certainly some concerns, at a minimum, questions that can be raised about what that Vanderbilt game was and what this team will look like going forward. And Mizzou has a week off to answer some of those internally, and then a tough test across the month of October when it comes to answering those questions on deck.
Yeah, it's not just the Vanderbilt win, because the week before, and admittedly Boston College is a good team, but there were certainly some things that happened during the BC game that I think worried Mizzou fans, and then you follow that up with the Vanderbilt performance. Not just Vanderbilt, but these last 2 weeks, do you look at that and say, okay, there are some things that got to get figured out here?
Yeah, I think you certainly can, because the things that maybe are good enough against a team like Boston College or a team like Vanderbilt probably won't be good enough on the road in Tuscaloosa or even on the road in College Station in a few weeks' time. So those are things that probably do need to be cleaned up. But I don't think it would be fair to expect Mizzou to be playing perfect football 4 weeks into the season. I don't think it'd be fair to expect any team to be doing that. So, you know, it's a challenging kind of duality of just results like Mizzou has had and the expectations that Mizzou has for what the rest of this season will entail. And there is some potential precedent for this. You think back to what we were talking about with Mizzou last year after that Middle Tennessee game. Mizzou escaped in that one, granted a little less dramatic and not quite as close as this Vanderbilt one was, but that was a game that Mizzou didn't win as comfortably as folks wanted, and then by the end of the year it was a pretty distant memory. So, you know, Mizzou I think will be wanting to make that precedent. Obviously that's to be determined at this point. But, you know, there is some history here that could factor in.
The run game was obviously very good today. The SEC announcing Nate Newell as the co-offensive player of the week. He ran for almost 200 yards. That was something that I know Tigers fans can be happy about.
Oh, absolutely. Just that's an undeniable positive, especially the way he's doing it, too. That outside zone scheme that this team just loves to lean on in the run game, it's working fantastically for Nate Newell. That's almost all of his runs are zone runs versus gap runs. And anytime you have a running back closing in on 200 yards and setting career highs, you know, that's going to be a great thing. And it's been encouraging, I think, for Mizzou to see that it does have a clear option at running back that it can go with. I know replacing Cody Schrader was something that a lot of people, you know, were concerned about going into the season, and that was a fair concern. Again, it's early, but these last two games, the Nate Newell emergence, That could be one concern that can be taken off the list just based on how he's played these last couple of games.
The fact that the game did feature some mental mistakes, penalties, things like that, that seems very fixable. And there's some things that may not be quite as fixable, but as frustrating as mental mistakes can be, is that one area where you would think the program feels confident that that's going to get better?
Yeah, I think so. And in all honesty, you can look at Coach Drinkwitz for some of that. His clock management at the end of the first half gave Vanderbilt 3 free points with that field goal before halftime. And I think his clock management was suboptimal at the end of the game, too. And that's not me taking shots. He admitted that after the game and said the team bailed him out. And so that's something that has to start with him, because, you know, he only has so much credibility to harp on other players for their mental mistakes when he's messing up the clock management part, which is his, you know, primary focus, primary objective. So those are things that certainly can be cleaned up, especially in a bye week. Fantastic timing for a bye week for Mizzou right now. And I imagine that'll be some of the emphasis when they're on the practice field this week.
Blake Craig hit the big 37-yarder there in the second overtime, which is the difference in the game, but he also had 3 missed field goals in regulation. Do you expect them to look around the roster and see if they have any other options, or is this Craig's job, and is there still confidence that he's going to be the guy?
It's Craig's job. They have another option on the roster in Nick Quadrini, who's the backup kicker if they really needed to go that route. But they won't be looking there at this point. They're instead going to be focusing on, you know, what do we need to do to get Blake Craig's confidence up, or just, you know, keep it at the level it needs to be through this stretch. There's no doubt that he has the talent to make big kicks. He made that one in overtime. He's now made two over 50 yards. And you can tell on some of those makes that he has the leg that he can hit from 55 plus. He could probably hit from 60 in some situations. It's just about the consistency and the confidence. Well, actually, they'll be healthy. I was talking to Harrison Mevis last week, and he's still around Columbia and around the facility. So I think, you know, he's someone who can give some just kind of informal, you know, I've been in your shoes advice to Blake Craig. But, you know, these are Craig's first games as a collegiate kicker. I think some growing pains are to be expected. Just, you know, three missed field goals is a lot to stack up at one game.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Eli Hoff for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today continuing to join us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. They drop in the polls, drop four spots to number 11 in the AP poll. They drop three spots also to number 11 in the coaches' poll. I didn't have a problem with that. We've seen that a lot already this year. There's been a bunch of teams that have had either, you know, wins against lesser teams and even some one-sided wins, and it hasn't been enough with because of some better performances out there. Did you expect that? Do you take any issue with the way the rankings went?
Yeah, you know, I expected them to fall after that game because, you know, it's a win that really doesn't feel like a win to, I think, anybody who watched or who was part of it. So I think a drop was to be expected. You know, four spots is a little drastic when you look at it, as they did still win the game. But also, I think it's tough for anyone to really argue Mizzou is a top 10 team based on these four games. And so Mizzou could certainly wind up being a top 10 team, could wind up moving up more. You know, there'll be more movement in the polls as some of these top 10 teams start playing each other. And that could play to Mizzou's favor. But, you know, I think at this point, for fans who are worked out about the AP poll, there are better things or more important things to worry about. One, the CFP rankings are what will determine a spot in the college football playoff, and those are still more than a month away at this point. And there are reasons why Mizzou dropped out of the top 10, and I think those are the things to be worried about more than what the coaches or the national media think about this team.
You look at the schedule in the game, not that they can't lose to anybody. Anybody can beat anybody on any given weekend, but the three ranked opponents that they still have on the schedule, Texas A&M on October 5th, Alabama, who's ranked number 4 right now, October 26th, and then they're going to match up against Oklahoma on November 9th, a couple weeks later. It seems like the schedule works out, though. Either it's a bye week or maybe a lesser opponent going into some of those games where they're going to be set up and having some good preparation time for these probably three games that really make or break their opportunity to have the kind of season they'd like to have.
Oh, exactly. The one thing that has not changed at all at this point is that Mizzou has a favorable schedule. And frankly, I'd argue there are parts of it that have gotten more favorable. You know, Texas A&M, you know, at this point in time, it's still 2 weeks away, but I'm not for sure who A&M is going to be trotting out at quarterback there. Mm-hmm. Same is true for when Auburn comes to town. And Oklahoma, you know, these some of Mizzou's future opponents are just now having quarterback competitions pop up mid-season. So it looks like the Tigers could be catching these teams at a good time. Obviously, road environments are always going to be tough. And like you said, you know, anybody can have a bad day. Anybody can have a great day. I think after what happened this weekend, Mizzou won't be taking any opponents lightly. But certainly still favorable. There's a very clear path to 10 wins. Still a path to 11 wins on the schedule. That part has not changed whatsoever.
I did not have Jackson Arnold at Oklahoma being benched on my college football bingo card for this year.
No, I did not either, and I'm bummed I didn't get to watch much of that game. Just the way it lined up, I was in the Mizzou press conference and writing afterwards. But you know, sounds like it was as eventful as advertised in Norman, and maybe not to the benefit of the home team there.
It's going to continue to be very interesting to watch Oklahoma and Texas and how they handle this league for the first time. And obviously Texas is the number one team in the nation, according to one poll, and they should be able to handle it maybe a little bit better. But this is a beast that is the SEC, that when programs come in and Missouri has experienced this, it's not always easy that first time through.
No, it really isn't. And they're going to learn that, you know, Texas, that time will come at some point here. I'm excited for when they play Georgia later this year. And that's one of the things that is exciting about the SEC this year. There are really seven teams that through this point in the season are making legitimate cases for being in the college football playoff. And Texas is among them. I don't think at this point Oklahoma is. But you look at the schedule too. Oklahoma just has an absolute gauntlet of a schedule this year. Texas is a little more favorable, but even then, Texas A&M on the back end of the regular season should be an entertaining game. So we're watching those two teams adjust and adjust while still having high expectations. Has been a really fun way to watch this SEC season so far.
Greg Sankey can be getting his comments ready leading into the final college football playoff rankings on just how many SEC teams should be in the playoff, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think he'll have to be lobbying for more than he can count on one hand.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes.
Well, Eli, we encourage everybody to read you in the Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com, on Twitter, @ByElyHoff. Appreciate the time, and hopefully we can catch up again down the line.
For sure. Always happy to chat.
Awesome. Thank you. That's Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today joining us. We will take a break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up hour number one. In hour number two, don't forget all Cardinals baseball in the second hour of the program, including listening back to some interesting things that John Mozeliak said here on KMOX yesterday, Tom Ackerman, also the comments made by Wilson Contreras and Nolan Arenado in the Cardinals clubhouse yesterday. We'll get into all of that coming up. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it on the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley as we start to wrap up hour number one of the program, hour number two. It's a strike zone hour. We'll do nothing but Cardinals as we're going to listen back to a little bit of what John Mozeliak had to say yesterday to Tom Ackerman during sports on a Sunday morning. At the end of the conversation, Tom asked a few questions that are kind of connected to the future, John Mozeliak's future, the future of people in the front office, the future of Oliver Marmol as well. And Mo is not going to overtly give anything away, but I think you can listen to his answers and maybe try to read between the lines a little bit. So we're going to do that together coming up a little bit after the 7 o'clock news. And then also we're going to play back what Wilson Contreras and Nolan Arenado had to say inside of the Cardinals clubhouse yesterday, which was notable. There's been a lot of talk about the comments that Contreras made, basically. I don't want to say calling out the front office. I feel like that's too strong, but asking forcefully for the front office to make some changes to the team going into next season. I am so intrigued by what's going to happen with this team going into next year, because in many ways they're kind of landlocked in certain areas where they need to be better. They need to be better at the top of the starting rotation. Well, for next season, you have Sonny Gray, Eric Fetty, Andre Pallante, Miles Michaelis, Steven Matz, all on the roster. You have Michael McGreevy and Gordon Graceffo as guys who you would love to see them get some sort of opportunity to compete for a job in spring training. You got Quinn Matthews, who's going to be showing up sooner than later, who zipped through all four levels of the minor leagues this year. It's not going to be easy. And that's not me saying they shouldn't add to the rotation. They absolutely should. They need more at the top of the rotation. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to pull it off. What do they do to become a better offensive club? There's guys who are... How much can you rely on Jordan Walker going into next year? How much can you rely on Nolan Gorman going into next year? Guys who were expected to be middle-of-the-order run producers, who you know those guys still have that ability inside of them, but they haven't shown it this year. So you can't go make these signings just to have insurance policies for them, because what if they do get things going? And I guess it's a good problem to have, but it's just... Man, are there questions going into next season? And this is going to be a very, very intriguing offseason. Of course, regular season's not over. Still a week's worth of baseball. They open up a series against the Rockies tomorrow. And of course, we'll have that for you right here on KMOX. But yeah, it's a strike zone hour. Next hour, we'll do nothing but Cardinals baseball. But we'll take a break right now, and I'll be back with you after the 7 o'clock news. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.